Hi, I'm Nick.
I am Bonsu.
And I'm Bryn. And this is Chalk It Up, a podcast that celebrates all things Sussex through stories and conversations with inspiring local people.
In this episode, we talk with Benjamin Ude about his journey to becoming an award-winning portrait photographer. We delve into his Sussex life and learn more about his beautiful photographic project, River Story, which observes life around a river, exploring our interaction with the natural world and the impact that we might be having. We hope you enjoy listening. Hello, Ben.
Hi, nice to be here.
Could you tell us about your journey to becoming a portrait photographer and how you came to live in Sussex?
Yeah, so I actually studied graphic design at university and then worked as a graphic designer for, about 12, 13 years. And for me, photography was always something that I was interested in, but more as a hobby rather than professionally. But through my design work with various agencies and things, I got into art direction as well, where I'd work with photographers to support them on shoots and kind of direct their vision. And I remember this one moment actually where I was doing that with a photographer and I was like, do you know what, this is actually pretty cool. This is the life that I want to live. I want to be there taking those pictures and making those images that I'm working really closely with as a designer, rather than being the sort of secondary person that takes those on and then works through layouts and things with them. I was already making photos in my spare time and in evenings and weekends and things, but nothing really, it was more of a hobby. But then that moment, that was when I started thinking, how do I get into this as a professional thing? So that took me on a bit of a journey to start exploring different avenues of photography and what that meant. Still didn't really understand it. I stayed in design for another 7 years and then eventually went back to assist the guy who had inspired me to become a photographer on that shoot. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my bridge into photography as a professional thing. So, he was an art photographer who still did commercial work as well. I went and assisted him for, I think, 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. Learned all the ropes, learned how to run a photography business. He was really generous in letting me use his lights and his equipment and his studio in the evenings and weekends. So I'd spend a lot of time getting people in to, in photography, you call it test shoots, which is basically making work for portfolios rather than professionally. I kind of learned my craft there and started getting a few clients here and there, and then started getting into it in a big way, really launching myself as a photographer rather than a designer.
And this is in London?
Sorry, this was in London, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So then we had our first child and we sort of dabbled with the idea of moving outside of London. Kind of felt that we wanted to raise our children, at that time one child, out in the countryside somewhere. And so my wife's got a connection with Sussex. Her parents live in East Grinstead. I spent a bit of my childhood in Brighton. And then I also spent my university days, I was in Hastings, so I kind of had this awareness of bits of Sussex. I was aware of Lewes because of the bonfire. I'd been there a couple of times, but I didn't really know it as a place. But when we really started looking properly and we were expecting our second child, we went onto Google and we literally Googled places to live after London. To see what came up.
Right, yeah.
Because I think we're both creative, so we had quite a lot of criteria to tick. We were keen that a place had that kind of nice creative vibe to it and had interesting things going on. And also that it was forward-thinking, which, you know, there's a good mix outside London, on the sort of periphery of London, of places that feel progressive and then places that maybe don't so much. And when we came to visiting Lewis, it felt there was something happening here. It felt really exciting. It wasn't just a pretty town, which it is. There was something bubbling under the surface. Like, there was creativity there. There was definitely progressiveness. You could just tell just being in the streets that there was something exciting going on. Mm. So we made the leap, not knowing anybody here, and decided to move to Lewis. Yeah.
And did you carry on working for the photographer in London at the time? Or did you, by then, were you earning a living yourself as a photographer?
Yeah, so by that point, I was kind of doing it on my own. I was doing a mix of graphic design and photography, but on my own rather than with the guy that I'd been assisting.
And who were your clients, or what type of work was your bread and butter, let's say?
So at that time, when we first moved, I had a few kind of charity-based clients, which I think was where my heart was. But I also had, I did some kind of sporty lifestyle kind of stuff. And I always thought that that's what I wanted to do, because I liked the style of photos that you could take. I liked that kind of reportage approach to it. I liked the vision that came along with that. And it was well paid. But it wasn't until lockdown that I had a bit of time to reflect, because all my work just dried up overnight, that I was like, what am I doing? I'm not really into that at all. Mm. And then I started to realise that actually my real passion was either for the environment or just for social good. So, you know, positive impact work. Mm. And I realised that I had these two passions. I had the creative side with photography and the side that I wanted to do stuff that was important and that made a positive difference. And I just connected them. And I was like, why have I not done this before? Mm. Why have I been focusing on using photography as almost like a model, but doing totally the wrong thing for me? So I scrapped all of that and realigned my portfolio and started getting in touch with people who did more the sort of stuff that I was wanting to get into. Mm-hmm. And I guess almost rebranded myself as a sort of doing work that's making a positive difference.
Mm. Yeah. Do you have a personal project, two children during lockdown? So you started to take those photos and build that story whilst you were having these ideas and thoughts about where to go, and so that went towards your portfolio and mm. helped you. How much did that project, and I guess lockdown in general then, it gave you the opportunity to explore this? Mm. And how did photographing your children influence how you thought you would present your portfolio, and where you wanted to take it, and what other types of personal projects you wanted to try to do?
It's really interesting that you picked up on that. Really interesting. Because it was that time around lockdown was a time that I was looking for my voice to change and to develop that. So the project with my children, which was really about my experiences through their eyes and observations of their life through this period of lockdown, that was a really good chance for me to explore a different way of using photography and a different way of approaching things, which is a little bit more leaning towards documentary sort of style. Mm. I think because I'd gone through this process of thinking, right, I want to really park the side of me that did all that sports lifestyle sort of stuff and move into more environmentally led projects and social well-being projects, that was in the back of my mind and in my sphere the whole time during lockdown. So I was also going out for when I went out for walks when we were allowed out, during lockdown, I'd take my camera and take lots of pictures of nature as well, and just started really focusing on and gearing towards what I wanted to become. So yeah, there was the nature side, there was the human interest side, and it was less, it felt really natural, it felt really nice, and like my observational skills were really honed during that time. And it just made me really aware of everything around me that I found beautiful and that I found stories in that I wanted to communicate. Yeah, it was an amazing time for that. Really amazing.
So you undertake several personal projects. Would you like to tell us about any of those? Any in particular that you're particularly proud of or that mean a lot to you?
So there are different sort of facets to the way I'm working at the moment. There is still the commercial side, and which sort of bleeds into editorial as well. Then there's the personal project that I feel is my kind of voice. It's almost like my story, or creating stories that I'm kind of really passionate about. And then there's a sort of third arm, which is more the artistic side, which is pretty pictures for the sake of pretty pictures, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Even if they've got a concept behind them, they're not a full story in themselves. There's a nice concept, and they're nice wall pieces. But yeah, I'm working on one at the moment, which I've been working on for the past year, and it's an environmental project. It's based in Sussex, but I'm very particular about not naming exactly where it is in Sussex. So I don't name it anywhere in any sort of literature or anything about the project, because I'm using it's one spot that I've repeatedly visited over the past year. So I've been there several times a month, so throughout the whole seasons, documenting the changing of the seasons and documenting the people that go there and how they relate to that space. It's an area of conjoining rivers where there's a lot of historical aspect to it. It's been used in settlements since Roman times for various different reasons. Then it was repurposed for milling of various different forms. People have used that area for livelihood, for commercial gain, for sustenance. It's got a lot of richness to it just in that one area. And now it's become a protected natural park area, and people use it more for leisure. So I'm really fascinated as that area, which is why I don't name it, that area as a sort of model for... or the symbolic model for the wider picture of how people and nature relate to each other, and what our impact is on the natural environment, what our motivation is, why we feel the need to connect, whether it is practical or whether it's for leisure or for mental health reasons. Just looking into that kind of human nature connection. The project, yeah, it's a year-long seasonal journey of people changing of the seasons in the natural environment, changing of human activity in the natural environment. And I'm pretty sure I've finished the work. There might be some gaps that I need to fill out, but I'm at a stage now which feels really good. It feels like I'm ready to wrap up that project. I've just secured with a gallery in Brighton. I've got an exhibition of the work in September, which is great. And I'm starting to communicate about it now. So it feels like a good point to go, okay, I've told that story. I just need to package it now and just, celebrate that and start talking about it. So, that's a really, really nice chunky project that I really, really feel proud of.
And which gallery is it?
So it's called Onca in Brighton. A friend of mine, I had a conversation with a friend in, I think it was the end of summer, and she was going to do some workshops there about orca whales, and I hadn't heard of Onca Gallery, but she said that their whole philosophy is that they believe in environmental justice and social justice. And I was like, why have I not heard about this? This is mm-hmm. exactly the right place that this story needs to be told.
So
it's really nice. It's quite a small gallery, but it's in a really nice position in Brighton. Love their philosophy. They're very supportive of artists who work in that way, and help artists kind of grow as well. So, yeah, I think it's definitely the right place to be exhibiting that. Yeah, for sure.
Wonderful. You had a photograph of a beekeeper that was shortlisted for Portrait of Humanity. That's the British Journal of Photography, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's quite a big deal, yeah? That's a worldwide entry for portrait photography.
So. Yeah.
So I wondered if using that as a sort of case study for explaining your process as to, you know, how do you work towards capturing an image like that?
Interestingly, I just did a post on LinkedIn today about my process in a very small kind of bite-sized way. But the way I tend to work with people, because I'm really drawn to people, and I kind of feel like anything I work on, even if I've got a project with other pictures in it as well, like nature and things, I feel the need to have the presence of people in there. And it's got to be, they've got to be doing the right things, they've got to be, you know, suggesting the right things. The way I tend to work with people is I allow them space to feel comfortable and feel natural in their environment, and then that opens up the conversation of the kind of visual conversation. You know, I create a space where through listening to them and showing genuine care and interest in what they're about, and empathy as well, I create a space where they feel like they can open up and we can explore ideas together. So like for the beekeeper, I spent 2 days with him in the New Forest, and we were driving around in his massive van, which had loads of beehives in the back, driving around to different spots and checking out where he'd put his hives in the New Forest. And I knew that for the commission, I needed to get some portraits. So there was a bit of reportage, and that's always a good way to start, because I find just, you know, having a big camera in your face, no one really likes that. And so if you can put people at ease by just chatting through it, just getting to know each other, but just snapping away kind of here and there, then they get used to the presence of the camera. And then there's a point where we feel like we know each other well enough and I can give a bit of direction. So for that particular portrait, largely it was just good timing. Mm-hmm. It was early evening in the summer. There was beautiful light coming through the forest that was getting dappled in different ways. He was all garbed up in his beekeeper outfit, which is quite aesthetically kind of a nice thing to photograph anyway.
Yeah.
I was getting him to pose in different kind of positions. Like I was getting him to hold up his the honeycomb and opening up the beehives so we could see in there. And we're just exploring different things together. And then I was kind of crouching down, hiding behind some bracken at some point, trying to shoot through that. And I just saw this like spot of light through him. And he was using his puffer as well to blow out smoke, because we thought that would be a really nice idea. So I got him to use his puffer, and that was blowing smoke everywhere. And I was like, oh, there's something in that. And then I just saw this like amazing pool of light just like in just the right spot. So he was quite dark.
Is this natural light?
This is natural light.
So you haven't set up any lights?
No, this was the sun working its magic. This was, you know, pure, beautiful, golden hour.
A moment.
Yeah. It just, you know, I took several frames of different positions. I gently guided him to move slightly this way or that way, and, you know, into the light. And he, you know, explaining the process as well, so he could get what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
That final shot was just this magic moment of the light was in the right place. His face was slightly obscured by the puffer, but I quite liked that. It kind of alluded to something rather than giving away the whole story. And we created magic. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Is that how long it usually takes people to become comfortable in front of the camera? Like a couple of days? Because I'd imagine, well, from what you're saying, people start behaving a bit differently as soon as they've got a camera pointed at them, or struggle to kind of behave naturally. Does it usually take a couple of days, or do some people just sort of slip into it?
Yeah. That's another interesting question, and actually I thought that as I was saying it, because I don't always get 2 days. Sometimes I get 5 minutes.
Sure.
With that, it was just we had the luxury of time to explore the area, you know, get to know each other. We hung out quite a lot. So we did have the luxury time for that. But, I sometimes have to work on portrait shoots for, you know, I do corporate portraits as well, where I will literally have about 5-10 minutes with somebody. And that's a little bit more challenging in that you don't have that luxury to get to know somebody in a deep way. But for me, in those instances, it's about breaking barriers as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And almost being quite direct as well, because you know you need to do something in a very short amount of time. It's all about communication. It's all about disarming someone and not making a massive draw or a massive point to the fact that you're taking their photo. Because, you know, if for example, I'm doing a corporate portrait shoot and there are 20 people all coming out throughout the day, 18 of them will be like, oh, I hate having my photo taken. And so you need to work with that and just straight away have some tricks up your sleeve to be like, so do I, you know, it's fine. What were you like when you were growing up? Change the subject, just change it completely. Don't focus on the photography at all. You know, when you're working with somebody for 2 days, it's great because they're part of that creative process and they're very aware you're taking photos and you can kind of work together to make that photo. But when you're in a situation where you haven't got that time, don't make a point of the fact that they're having their photo taken. Take that away from it and just click away, so like, you know, and just do your thing.
And with the more sort of documentary, with other sort of documentary subjects that you've worked with, how have you found them in terms of that time, that length of time, when you have a sort of similar situation to the beekeeper, or if you're shooting people in the in this area where the rivers converge? How long does it take people to sort of get relaxed to that, or not be put too performative?
I think with documentary sort of stuff, I would tend to lead by conversation first and leave the camera to the side, and just as much as possible, if we've got time, just get to know each other a little bit and find out what makes them tick, what they're interested in, what's drawn them to a particular area or a particular subject, if that's what we're covering. And then just, you know, through kindness and empathy, just say, you know, do you mind if I just snap a few pictures here and there? And just do it on the fly a little bit. And then keep that conversation, you know, keep it going, keep them interested, keep me interested, because I'm genuinely interested in what they have to say. And then as it goes along, you sort of get to a stage where you feel like, okay, cool, we're both nice and relaxed now. I'm just going to, do you mind just standing there for a second? Or do you mind just sitting on this? And, oh, just turn that way a little bit. You know, I'm just going to put a bit of light on you. Or, you know, and just kind of being very respectful, I guess. With the project that I've been working on, which is called River Story, sometimes I spend 5 minutes with people there as well. But my initial approach is that I'll just get chatting with them. And we'll just chat about the area, about the fact, you know, why are they here? What are they doing here? And then I ask if I can take their photo. I tell them a bit about the project. why I'm doing it, why I feel it's important, and they have the option to say no. I've been very fortunate with this project that I've only been turned down maybe two or three times out of about, I don't know, 30, which is quite a good hit rate. But I think it's because people are in that area, enjoying that area, and they like to know that I'm invested in that area as well. You know, they're either repeat visitors, so they might live there, or they live just outside and they come there to walk their dogs or something. But there's a draw for them to be there. So knowing that somebody also cares about that and is making a project that is saying something as well, it's saying something about the environment, I'd say, yeah, 90% of people are really on board with that.
And do you hang on to their details, and will you let them know about the exhibition? Because that'd be lovely for them, seeing these, you know, these beautiful moments in their lives that have been captured so, so beautifully.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's really important to me. So with everybody that I approach, I ask if I can take a model release. So I've got an app on my phone which allows me to grab their details. And I say explicitly, it's not to send you marketing junk or anything like that. This is literally for your permission for me to use the photos and so that I can keep you up to date with the project. So yeah, I've got this app on my phone, which takes a few of their details, takes a quick snap, and then I've got that record. I can send them that signed release straight away. So it emails me and them, so they've got a copy as well. And I always say, if you feel, you know, read it in your own time. If you feel like actually you'd rather not be part of it, just let me know, and that's absolutely fine. But I would love to let you know about anything that's going on with the project. And yeah, I'd love it if, you know, as many people that are involved as possible could make it down. That would be incredible for them to see the you know, their part in that come to life. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, an incredible shared experience for people, and people who haven't met each other but have this shared experience with this sort of invisible dotted lines.
Yeah.
What about your kids? Photographing your kids, are they completely relaxed in front of the camera now? Or do they like having their picture taken, or are they used to it, or they like, Dad, stuff it?
Yeah. So I've sort of stopped with them a little bit because, but I'd like to get back into it. I know we went through a period just on our phones of taking photos with them, and they just wouldn't stand still. So that we found that really frustrating. Then I started photographing them in a sort of more considered way, like a documentary style kind of way. And yeah, I found them, I found they were quite aware of the camera for a while, and especially when they were a little bit younger. So during lockdown, which was about 3 years ago, they'd come up and put their big faces right up in the lens and things. And I'd just allow that to happen because it was just part of the process. They just needed to go through that. But then I gently encouraged them to just get on with whatever they were getting on with, building blocks or, I don't know, crafting together or doing whatever they were doing, and just naturally leave them in that space and then quietly observe and just be very unobtrusive about it, because I think the minute they were aware that there was a camera going on, they'd start to show up for it and play up for it and things. Yeah, I haven't tried in a while, to be honest, taking pictures of them, but they've, in the past couple of years, as they've started to grow up, they've become very much more aware of cameras and what that means. So even, again, on phones, there's this need to pose and... Yeah, which is fine on your phone, but if I'm doing something that I want to create a bit of interest about what their story is, I wouldn't be looking for that.
Mm.
I'd be looking for the more natural moments.
Yeah,
but yeah, they've definitely become more aware of what a picture, what the result is.
Mm.
So they've become more like the rest of us, like adults. They become more kind of self-aware and self-critical of being in front of a camera, which is... Yeah, it's an interesting challenge for them.
Yeah, so saying that, I mean, how would you normally encourage amateurs or just general public if they were taking photos? What makes a great photo?
That's a very, very good question, but also a very vast question because there are so many elements to that. But I think So for me, it's all about learning to see without a camera. Mm. I think that would be my take home, would be, you know, if somebody was out there trying to photograph certain things and just trying to improve on their photography or, you know, improve their eye, I just say, just go out without a camera for an hour. Go for a walk and just look up, look down, look at the tiny little leaves, look at the changes of light on everything. Just really be hyper aware of all those little things around you that you probably wouldn't notice otherwise. Because I think sometimes the tendency is, if you've got a camera with you, you just point at what you think you should point it at. So you see something that's pretty, you're not entirely sure how to bring that prettiness out, so you just photograph it as it is. But if you're looking at life and at nature, whatever you're drawn to, with curiosity, with a different set of eyes, I think then you come back to it and you just know what to look for. Like, I actually taught my mum that. She was just through wandering around, I think we were wandering around London once together, and I'm just naturally observational about that sort of stuff. So I was like, oh, mum, look at that beautiful light on the pavement. And she was like, oh yeah, that is really nice. I wouldn't have noticed that. And then throughout that day, she kept on noticing a few more things as well, because she'd been trained into that then. And then I remember, like, I don't know, a few weeks, a month later or something, and we're chatting on the phone, and she said, oh, I've taken some really nice pictures of light on my phone, because, you know, because you showed me that exists, that's a thing, you know, to look out for. So yeah, for me, everybody who you speak to about photography would have their different take on what makes a good photo, how, if you're an amateur, how you would get better at photography. My own thing is just learning how to see without a camera.
And it's when you are out and about doing or looking for things that you should see, is there like something that inspires you? You know, so, you know, for instance, I when I go to national parks and things like that, most of the things that really inspires me is maybe seeing you know, sort of a bulb kind of coming up with a leaf, or sort of spring, you know, springing out, something like that. And I enjoy that because it just reminds me of life, you know. So if I was going to photograph anything, it would be about life. You know, so I don't know what really inspires you. If you are taking photos, what inspires you?
I think light, probably. Because if I look at any situation where I'm out with or without a camera, I'm just drawn to how the light plays off things.
Right.
So, like, I could go to somewhere like Seaford Head, which is quite a big open vista. And what I really love about that is just the way that the light's working. Like, it might be a sunset or sunrise or something like that. Just how that's working on the sea and on the cliffs and all that sort of stuff. But then on a smaller scale, I might be walking around somewhere like Railway Lands, and there's just this spot of light on a patch of leaves or something. And that's just magic to me. Yeah, light's everything for me.
Yeah, it's quite funny, actually. It's poetic, you know, poetically, or whatever way you could put it, light and life really merges, isn't it? Life is, you know, light, and light is life, isn't it? So, and I think probably as humans, we kind of drawn towards light a lot, in a way. But I mean, you know, that is interesting as well. Now, if you bring it to Sussex, and, you know, there are quite lots of things that, you know, you've mentioned things I'm familiar with, like Ruin Land, and, you know, and I think we all walked quite a bit during the pandemic. We probably end up knowing a lot more. I mean, and you must have moved here at a perfect time, or in a right time, not perfect, actually, during the pandemic. I mean, how did you find when you was allowed to go out taking pictures? Did you find something really interesting around Sussex, around where you live, and that move that brought you here? Yeah. How did you find it with that photography at that time, that, you know, I think not many people are saying pandemic these days. It sounds so long time ago, but
yeah,
yes,
it does.
During the pandemic, how was it?
Yeah, I think just generally moving to Sussex has changed my perception and the way I see things massively. And the pandemic was definitely part of that. So like before the pandemic, we moved here in 2018, so 2 years before the pandemic. The kids were very little, so we spent a lot of times just exploring Sussex and taking them for big walks in the buggy, just getting out and about and looking up where was good or hearing word of mouth where was interesting to go and explore. And then the pandemic was kind of an extension of that in some ways, but obviously we did have restrictions, so it was a bit more Lewis based. But yeah, we'd go out on walks together and find new areas, and I'd go out on my own and find new areas. But yeah, Sussex just generally, and Lewis in particular, just where it is and what it's surrounded by. Since moving here, it's given me the inspiration that I just couldn't have got anywhere else, I don't think. Well, certainly not living in London. I think living in London, I would have got a particular kind of inspiration, and I'd have been drawn to a particular kind of aesthetic, maybe. But yeah, I mean, there are so many amazing areas around us that I've explored, that I've yet to explore, that I, you know, and even just, you know, cycling around, driving around and just noticing these places, there are so many amazing spots that I'm drawn to that I just think, oh, that would make the perfect picture, and then I come back to it, or I write it down in a bank of ideas. It's just, yeah, I just think it's an amazing, amazing spot. Yeah, I spent a lot of time on the Downs in lockdown. Found out some hidden areas as well there, which was interesting. I feel like we're spoiled for choice. I just think Sussex and Lewis, where we are, what we're surrounded by, is just, yeah, full of inspiration.
Sounds good.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love it.
It's last thing I wanted to add to it was I discovered the Downs and, you know, during pandemic as usual, and I spent quite a lot of time walking, going to the hills and going to
Mount Cavan.
Mount Cavan, yeah. It was quite satisfying to see, and again, actually now reflecting what you've said about the lights, how the lights actually get through the kind of mountains and so forth, and you could be walking through some real lovely like light and gaze, you know, when you walk through there. So yes, you were right, we are really spoiled, you know, there's so many places you could get to, but then comparatively, so you've talked about what could have inspired you in London, what is inspiring over here. You know, and then the kids and growing up wise, you know, would you not normally now sit back and say, well, actually, we made a really good choice, you know, moving down?
100%. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I still go to London for work sometimes and, you know, go up and meet friends and things. And it feels good to do that because I've still got a big place in my heart for London. It's got a lot going on, it's got a good energy. But yeah, I think Lewis is a really special place, and it's just the right size. It's not too small. It feels like there's still life, there's still stuff going on here, and it's just connected to the natural world in the most amazing way. You know, like you were saying about the Downs, like you can go up there and just feel like you've got the most amazing, epic view. And, you know, the wind up there blows away the cobwebs as well. It's great.
Yeah.
Then you go over to, like, a chalk pit and you're like, wow, look at this crazy place as well. This is really cool. And, you know, we've got woodlands around. We've got everything. We've got the coast, we've got woodlands, we've got hills. What more could you want? You know?
Have you, so within those, I think in particular, you get a lot of sort of really grassroots groups popping up, particularly around the environment, so around like the railway lands and Lamport Bottom, and you've got the Love RUs kind of thing going up. Have you sort of made any connections with those groups, or would you ever have any interest in documenting the work of those groups?
Yeah, definitely. So I've been in touch with a couple of those groups, particularly Railway Lands. We were going to do some stuff a while ago together, but then lockdown happened and things changed. But I've, yeah, absolutely. There's some really interesting people doing really interesting stuff, and it's been on my mind more and more recently that I'd like to get involved and support what they're doing, even if it's through photography, and that's kind of my mode of support. Yeah, because there's like Wildflower Lewis as well.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool group. Yeah, there are lots and lots of small environmental groups doing really interesting things. And yeah, it's definitely on my mind to start getting involved in some of that work in some sort of way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I often wonder why Lewis is sort of attracted so many sort of like-minded people or progressive people, forward-thinking people. Why do you think that is?
I think it's so that there's the history of Lewis that you all probably know a bit better than me, which made it a very independent place. I think also the proximity to Brighton, which is has got quite a kind of alternative bohemian scene. Possibly there's something in that. I think it's, you know, it's a beautiful town surrounded by countryside, and I think there, you know, people are drawn to here because of that as well. So they, you know, naturally people go on more walks and get more involved in nature. I don't know. You're right. I don't know exactly. I don't know how to answer that. But
have you or certainly when you moved down, did you find it a welcoming place to move to?
I did. Yes, I always found it welcoming. In fact, when we first moved, I found it a bit too welcoming.
What do you mean, man?
Yeah, just moved from London. This is too much.
Yeah. Coming from London, where you know you don't look a stranger in the eye, and you don't really get to know your neighbours or anything like that. Straight away when we moved, we were presented with a cake on our doorstep, and I was like, what is this place? Where have we moved to? This is a little bit like Pleasantsville, isn't it?
What's in the cake?
But I got used to that and actually really appreciated the fact that our neighbours were really lovely. It took me a while to warm up socially, just because I was back and forth to London for the first few years with work. And my wife was back at home with our new child at the time. So she was in the midst of that, and she was kind of loosely meeting people through playgroups and things. But, yeah, I didn't really find my tribe probably until our kids started school.
Sure, yeah.
And then gradually got into various different parent groups, just because I'm a dad. There are other dads out there, and we've got a love for Lewis.
Yeah.
And now I feel more connected than ever, and feel really at home here. And yeah, I just absolutely love it.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's gone from the overbearing cake.
I'll probably never get one again.
Yeah. You'll be baking it for some new neighbour.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust my baking.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. No. It's it's a lovely area. It's definitely welcoming. Yeah. I feel like everybody's really friendly. Everyone that I've met seems really, really just happy to be here. Everyone's really passionate about the area. Everyone seems to love Lewis. It's got a lot of charm going for it. And you know, they love to compare notes about where the best country pub is, and you know, where the best place to go for walks with your kids or your dog is, that kind of thing. I think, yeah, it's just a really special place, and I'm very, very grateful to have found it.
Yeah, sounds great. Sounds awesome. I mean, what other areas and aspects have you visited since, and what sort of impact has that made on you as well?
Trying to think where we've been.
Just to give you a steer on that, I'm quite interested to hear about your time in Hastings.
Yeah. Because you're from Hastings.
I'm from Hastings.
Yeah.
It's a hard act. Lewis, after what we've just talked about with Lewis, it's going to be an incredibly hard act to follow, yeah? But I'm just interested in your time there.
I really enjoyed Hastings. Full disclosure, I thought I was going to Brighton University, up until about 2 weeks before my course started. And I phoned up the school office to find out where I could live, where the halls were. And she was like, halls? We don't have halls. I was like, you're Brighton, you must have halls.
So you were in Brighton?
No. So this was after A-levels.
Yeah.
I was living at home in Cambridge, which is where my family are from. I had applied to Sussex University, thinking, naively, I'd be going to Brighton. But the campus, it turned out, was in Hastings.
Yeah.
So I literally found out 2 weeks before my course started I was going to be in Hastings. Anyway, it went...
Brighton's Hastings, well. Yeah. As a student, you know.
As a student, it wasn't ideal because I had lots of friends who were... I had a few friends who were in Brighton.
And they planned to go to Brighton.
They planned to go to Brighton. They knew what they were doing.
They actually put Brighton in there. Brighton in there.
Yeah, and I had some friends in London as well, and there was that sort of, they're probably having a better student time than me. But actually, for my nature, looking back, it was probably a good idea that I didn't go, I wasn't in a city, because I think I probably would have found that at the time a bit overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I needed that quieter place, but there was still stuff to do. Me and my mates would often go to Brighton at the weekends to go out and things, so it wasn't that far. But yeah, I'd had a great time. I loved being by the sea. That was really nice. The old town's lovely.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, nice.
What most people say when you mention Hastings. The old town's lovely.
And I remember, if it's okay to say this, and shoot me down if it's not.
Say whatever you like.
But I remember my tutors at the time going like, it's up and coming. I was like, oh, cool, yeah, I can see that, you know, there's stuff going on. But I went there about, I don't know, a year ago, and the same people were saying the same things still. Yeah. They were like, yeah, but it's up and coming. And you're like, why are you saying that about 15 years ago? How long did this transition happen?
Yeah. I don't think it will gentrify, but I think that's a good thing.
Mm.
Because what Hastings does have... is a lovely old town. No. But also, like, St Leonard's now is coming on. It's up and coming. But what it has is it's got a large stock of large houses with good light, which I think attracts artists, because it's affordable and it's spacious, and, you know, the big windows and the sea views, you get a lot of light, you know.
Mm.
So, and that's what you need if you're you know, an artist, and you're not perhaps making a lot of money, and so it's ideal. So I think it's a little bit like Margate in that sense. Margate's got a closer connection to London, so I think that it's sort of the new East End of London, don't they, Margate?
Yeah.
And of course it's got the gallery. But you know what I mean? It's that sort of, Margate's got its problems as well. Mm. And seaside towns generally... do, because they had their heyday, didn't they, in the Victorian era, where they were the holiday destinations. And when you look at the architecture of Hastings, it's pretty splendid.
It's beautiful.
It knocks the pants off of Lewis, no problem. It's just that those buildings are so big, this costs so much money to maintain. And Burton St Leonard's, it's lovely. I mean, you went to Hastings College of Arts and Technology.
Which is when it existed. It was a lovely college, like exactly what you just described about the architecture. Not sure what period it was, but it was an absolutely beautiful old art building. With all these amazing facilities, all these corridors that you could get lost in, drift into the screen printing area, drift into the photography area. It was great. It was an amazing place. But I think a few years ago they demolished it and now turning it into, I don't know, houses or flats. Something like that. Or yeah. Flats, yeah.
Mm. How was your experience? By the way, I lived in Bexhill for 11 years.
But did you?
Yes, of course. We first moved into Sussex, into Bexhill. Loved the place, you know. I mean, I have different experiences over there as I worked in Brighton and in London, you know, mainly from Bexhill, like sort of travelling in and out. I loved it because it was quiet, it was lovely. I don't know, what experiences do you have in Bexhill? I mean, did you ever kind of visit Bexhill?
Yeah, I did occasionally. I can't remember why, though. Because I think when I was there, I don't think the Delawar Pavilion was there. Mm. I know it was.
It
would have been, but they were renovating it. So they did a massive renovation around 2000 and, don't quote me on that, maybe 2010 or 2000, you know, sort of time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, and then it kind of became really awesome. And you know, I remember doing quite a lot of, there were some huge art galleries, exhibitions, you know, there was this massive guy, I can't remember, but, you know, every time you will go there will be this massive artist, like, who's, you know, kind of doing some massive work there. Mm. And because it has this space and the building is incredible. Mm. You know, it was
fantastic.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Did they have an Anthony Gormley exhibition there once?
I wouldn't seem
to remember.
On the roof. Really,
yeah, on the roof. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, with that, like, is that the guy, you know, sort of
the figures standing.
I spent, you know, me and Christina spent quite a lot of time going there.
Mm.
We felt amazing. You know, apparently it was a big art, you know, I don't know him, by the way. Excuse my, you know, sort of ignorance on the artist, you know, that. Uh-huh. But we, a friend of ours, like, from Southampton, just called and said, like, we're coming down, this exhibition. We're like, what are you talking about? And and then they came and spent a couple of days, like, looking at it. It was amazing.
Mm.
Living in Bexhill. I love St. Leonard's, you know, kind of all the way on, you know, sort of adjoining Hastings. I do have really good memories out there. You know, we love our walks. You know, of course, we had Millie there, you know, and then we moved after Millie was born. But I think, you know, in Sussex, you know, I've done a lot of work around Sussex, you know, through my work, and I haven't necessarily been anywhere that I kind of think I wouldn't like. You know, that's the feeling I get. You know, most places continue to have that welcoming kind of nature. People are welcoming as well. There are, you know, you do have certain areas that are still challenging, you know, like everywhere else. But I think you kind of find the landscape and the people generally really nice.
So what drew you to Lewis from Bexhill?
Just purely for childcare, really. When we had Millie, I had a business in Brighton. Christina worked in Charleston, and we were looking, my in-law, you know, Christina's parents lived in Hassocks. So we were looking for somewhere quite, you know, in the middle.
Mm.
And basically, Lewis was, we drive through it all the time to Hassocks, and we were like, well, it's actually a few minutes to Brighton, a few minutes to Hassocks, a few minutes to Charleston. It really was the right sort of area to pick.
Mm.
And we really didn't know much about Lewis. But like yourself, the experiences that we've had is we've come in and we felt, you know, it's almost through the school and everything, this is the most connected place that we've lived.
Yeah.
In Bexhill, we both worked in, you know, as I say, I worked in London and so many other areas, I didn't really spend time in Bexhill at all.
Yeah.
It was almost like a home, you know. I come in and I enjoy being at home, but in Lewes it's almost home, work, friendship, family, you know, everything that you kind of, you know, kind of almost become part of the society. I'm still discovering it, but yeah, it's been such a surprise, you know, how it's become for us. Yeah,
that's really good.
Yeah,
because I know what you mean about you know, if you're living in somewhere like Bexhill but you're working in London, it's really difficult to, you know, it's home,
yeah,
but it's really difficult to feel connected as much, isn't it? Like you spend your evenings and weekends there, and you know, you might go out for walks, but it's not as easy to meet people, I think. Definitely school opens that up as well, doesn't it?
Yes, totally. Yeah. I think, yeah, it's, the school has been, and I think for Christina as well, because she was born in Brighton and grew up in Brighton, then moved to Reading where we met, and then coming back into Sussex, you know, she's as new as everyone else, you know, because all her friends and everyone is moved on, so she has to reconnect, you know, again. Mm. But this is the only area that she basically managed to connect through schools as well. So I think generally, I mean, we've all discovered that Lewes is you know, there are quite a lot of kind of people in our age group that are living here with their children in the sort of age group that our kids are, that manages to connect quite well because they are coming from, I think, an appreciative background. They appreciate, you know, the fact that Lewes is nice place. You can actually, I have, you know, you can meet people really, you know, sort of in any sort of environment, and you can form relationship quite easily, as compared to certain areas that it doesn't work like that. Like you've said, in London, no one is going to look up in your eye and say hello or how are you feeling. But that's the, you know. And actually, saying that, I was driving in London yesterday in the middle of traffic, and this old guy, this is just on the top, you know, just talking about this old guy, basically fell down, and I left my car in the middle of the whole street to go and help.
Wow.
People come. You know, people basically sitting there, and these guys come get out of the bus, for instance, and help the old guy to get up.
Yeah.
And then they just went straight back into the bus when the traffic was going. I was thinking, call 999 or something.
Yeah.
And I am 100% sure. I mean, I've blocked the whole road and I have to get back in my car, but I felt so guilty. But I felt that if this was Lewes, people will sit with this old guy, hold hands, walk him to a coffee shop, get him some drink, and, you know, that sort of thing, right? Yeah.
I've seen exactly that happen, like, at least 3 or 4 times, and people, you know, straight away on the person, and then you can see people saying, like, standing back, saying, like, maybe, do they need an extra pair of hands? No, they don't. People being really, like, super, super considerate. And, yeah, just, like, looking after people. It's, yeah, it's lovely. Well, good on you, man.
But it's what we are talking about. You know, we're quite fortunate to. But, I mean, so bring this back on you. Like, now that you've, you know, what's next for you? Like, well, you know, we've talked about this lovely project that is coming up. I mean, and please do. We hopefully will put a lot of this, you know, on our feedbacks and also on the website. But how people get in? But after that, what are you thinking of? What is the next thing? What are you working on that we all have to look forward to?
Well, so this project, River Story, is a good, I guess, starting point for me to start working with galleries a bit more and doing a bit more of my own work and focusing on art, which I guess, you know, as a creative is what drew me to in the first place. You know, I liked creating. That's what it's about. So, yeah, I haven't got any... I have got some thoughts bubbling in the background of what another project might be. And I might loosely start something in the next few months, but I think I'll be so focused on working towards the exhibition, getting everything made up for that, and promoting that, that I'll probably wait until that's over to fully start something. But I think, yeah, it's given me a really nice taste of the opportunity to use my own voice rather than a voice for somebody else. And show that, you know, show what I'm about, which has taken me years to get there. I've always been giving other people a platform, and it's quite nice to finally have something to say that I'm passionate about. So I think more of that, definitely. And, you know, we'll see how this exhibition goes, but I'd like to keep on doing that, making more exhibitions. The plan with River Story is that I'd like to make it into a book as well, into a photo book, coffee table photo book. So I'll probably be looking into that again on the build up to the exhibition, but that will require its own sort of set of funding and things, so I'll look into that fully afterwards. But yeah, more art stuff, I think. Yeah,
a perfect place to end, I think.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Chalk It Up, and if you did, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with friends and family. You can also follow us on Instagram at Chalk It Up Sussex Podcast, where you can find exclusive content, including video footage of some of our shows. Thank you for listening.